This is BJ Bullard. I'm sitting here with Gilda Shepherd, who is going to be teaching our Communication Across Cultures class in the winter term. Gilda's a professor at the Evergreen State College in Tacoma and is also somebody who is an extraordinary filmmaker, a real citizens intellectual, and very, very involved in all kinds of social justice things. What do you think of that, Gilda?
Wow, I like that. It sounds like, hey, Gilda, how you doing? I want to meet you.
So you were saying something like, what is social justice?
Yeah. You know, BJ, that has been a word that has been tossed around a lot.
Yeah.
Even Glenn Beck talks about social justice. But I think he wants to ambush it. You know, really what I think social justice is when we look at I look at it as action and consciousness as well. Okay, but I think there are certain ingredients, and I don't mean to be essentialist with social justice, but I think there are some themes that need to run through social justice, and I think that what needs to happen is that a redistribution of resources. That, you know, we do have a power elite, and I don't mean that to be a real point my finger at people who have a lot of money. But when I say power elite, I mean those people who revolve around themselves and reap the benefits of folks on the margin, okay? So I really think there needs to be a redistribution of resources, be them human resources, as well as wealth. And I'm not even talking about paychecks. I'm talking about the wealth of the importance of housing, health care, education, as those are the things that are wealth that I'm talking about. And in addition to redistribution that we need to think about and to change this 1% that controls so much of our wealth and possibilities and even our imagination, that we need to have an idea of recognition. That we need to recognize the historical contributions and cultural contributions of peoples of the world, right? Not just even in our neighborhood, but peoples of the world. And I look at that as like what Antonio Gramsci talked about when he talked about the organic intellectual. Those folks who are out there interrogating concepts and unfairness and realizing that they didn't just start from right here. Oftentimes, we start social justice with the movement that we become conscious of. People started thinking about Haiti or New Orleans, and they started thinking about that when the hurricane came, you know, as if nothing happened before that or anyone, that there wasn't a history and culture of resistance about the environment, about housing and those kinds of things. So we need to have a recognition of a person's brilliance and that brilliance applied to their activism. I also think that social justice involves feminism. And I mean, when I say feminism, I mean that there is a tendency, and if you look at this world, where women particularly, and then you look at that, then women of color, then economically disenfranchised women, that we need to pay attention to the most marginalized and see their contribution to society. So when I say feminism, I mean something that also liberates men from horrible things that happen, because I think that when there's discrimination against women, that does also, there's a discrimination against men, that there's an increasing population of women who are incarcerated, more and more and more, maybe not as many men, but there's an increasing population. And what happens when a woman goes to prison? Because oftentimes it's women who are taking care of our children. We're raising our children and doing those kinds of things. So I think a feminist perspective that includes not just equality but equity. But I'm a feminist from the bell hooks kind of way. So you know, like choosing the margin as a place of radical possibilities, not just a place of deprecation or like woe is me. And in addition to redistribution, recognition, and feminism, that love and compassion should be an overarching theme that runs throughout it. Not just love that goes out, but love that's inside that moves out, and a kind of compassion that you understand that my liberation is tied to your liberation, you know, and that, you know, the struggle against racism, the struggle against white supremacy is in all of our interests. The struggle against homophobia and those kinds of things and class bias is in all of our interests. That we see our connection to one another.
How does that impact your mission as a teacher or your practice as a teacher?
Yeah. Well, I do a kind of engaged pedagogy where there's a connection between theory and practice. Even when I'm teaching a statistics class with, you know, at Evergreen.
Oh, I remember that. That was so cool. It was theme and variation, and you used jazz.
Yeah, we used jazz. We used jazz music to do that. So what we're talking about is using something from a person's cultural background or something that they can have some kind of intimacy with, like music. And in that instance, it was jazz. And how statistics is not something that only deals with numbers, but we can look at its existence or explain it and its impact through material, non-material culture, like music. I mean, what has been, how many women have composed jazz? There are several, but how many do we know? What about when you're doing an old classical jazz tune and you throw in a little lit, like Mary had a little lamb, bzzz. What happens? It's like history when the Civil Rights Movement happened. What happened when we threw in the Civil Rights Movement and the Civil Rights Bill? What happened when Kennedy died? What happened when Johnson came in and said, let's make sure the Civil Rights Bill was passed? Is that jazz? Is that dissonance? Does that transform things? Those kinds of things. So it's more than a metaphor. But it allows someone to have access to some things that seem to be so far away from them. If we use something in a person's environment, and to me, that's how. When you do social justice, you know, I'm a revolutionary artist, and Tony K. Bambara says, to be a revolutionary artist, you got to make the revolution irresistible. And so, you know, you got to use things from a person's background, you know,
yeah.
Those kinds of things.
Well, you're doing this work now in the prisons, right?
Yeah.
Tell me about that film project.
Okay. I'm teaching sociology classes at both Monroe Men's Prison and the Women's Prison in Purdy. And we're using the concept that I talked about earlier, sociological imagination, looking at how the social forces impact a person's biography. And from that, even though it's seemingly out of their control, how that can be transformative by understanding that that social forces have sometimes outside of them, like an economic depression or something like that, or three strikes you're out, you know, those kinds of things, how they have impacted a person's life. But that consciousness and knowing that doesn't mean that, okay, yeah, I know, so I'm going to sit back and let it happen to me. But, yeah, I know, so therefore this is my fuel to try to transform not only my situation but the root of the problem, to try to change the laws, those kinds of things. So what I've been seeing in the prisons is the internal transformation that these men and women have taken upon themselves. Because I'm doing volunteer work with University Beyond Bars, and sometimes we think, oh, here we come to save the day, da-da-da-da. But what happens is what we do is just open the curtain. The play is written. Act one. Act two, act three, that these men and women have already developed activism within prison. At the Monroe Prison, there's the Black Prisoners Caucus that's been going on for 40 years. They bring in public school teachers and students to talk to them about possible creative, engaging pedagogy and different other kinds of instances they can do with children that they so-call at risk. I mean, phenomenal. And they have them come year after year. They have a family caucus. They have an an education caucus, they have a healthcare caucus, and they have anti-gang caucus. They have the Concerned Lifers group, where they bring in kids who have been adjudicated in the juvenile facilities. These men bring them in through other outside forces and nonprofit organizations they've been able to contact. And they've organized that, negotiated with the administration at the prison, and never give up. And they bring these individuals in so that they can do some kind of social action. So what I do with University Beyond Bars, you know, is come in, I just say, okay, let me open up the curtain by putting a camera on it. I put a camera on it, and I'm going to develop a documentary about what these men and women are doing inside prison. The women at Purdy develop an organization called The Village, and they act out different values and those kinds of things, and it's just phenomenal work. It's kind of like, you know, with Viktor Frankl in Man's Search for Meaning. He talks about the importance of transformation inside in order to be able to understand what's going on, and I'm a better teacher and actually a better person. And, you know, I hardly have any fears anymore because of it. I realized the internal goodness of most people.
Wow. And I'm sure they're really benefiting a great deal from the kind of connections that you're making.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, as an accomplished filmmaker, I mean, this isn't your first film. You've done others. In fact, didn't you do one that went to Cannes?
Yeah, can you imagine that? Now, it's not the big Palais. It's a little Palais. And it was under the rubric of the African film, so I got in there. I did work. I went to Ghana, West Africa, and I worked with Liberian women and children, refugees, at a refugee camp called Budumburum. It was a refugee camp made for, I think, 1,000 people, and now it has over 5,000 people living there.
Wow, 5,000 people living in a camp?
Yeah, yeah. And let's see.
How many of them were women? Didn't you tell a story about that?
Yeah, over 60%, about 70% are women and children. And I went there, you know, with my imperial wells, a liberal self, and said, okay, I want to do something on female child soldiers because I'm a feminist and all I hear is about male child soldiers. You know, let everyone know your story of rape and devastation and war. And they all looked at me and stared at me and said, we don't want to tell that story. The story we want to tell is our change. They didn't say transformation, but they used the word change. They said not change because of the war, but in spite of the war, and the change that goes beyond the war. They said, let's call ourselves, and it's spontaneous, you got to believe me, women together as one. They said, we want business classes, literacy classes, computer classes. We want cosmetology classes so that we can feel our bodies that have been raped, and we can adore each other, that women can touch another woman and put makeup on her and comb her hair and see how beautiful she is. We put on fashion shows. We made cloth. I went out using my PhD, using my privilege responsibly, and got volunteers, Africans, Ghanaians, to come in to teach literacy classes, Ghanaians who are midwives to come in and talk about the anatomy and their bodies. So that's how the stories came out about rape. It came out of a place of transformation and power, hence using the margin as a place of radical possibilities. And so I learned so much from them and developed scholarships. The women put their money together from selling foods and cloth and for scholarships for different kids that they did themselves, not just going out to get volunteers, but work that they did themselves without hesitation. And sometimes they would say, when one of the women would say something out of turn, according to them, they would say, give me the camera, Gilda, and they would take the camera and says, now see it. And they would put the camera on them as a place to say, do you want people, the world, to see you like this? Do you want the children to see you like this? So I thought, oh, God, let me go home and look at this. But the women never turned on the cameras when they put it on those women who allegedly were speaking out of turn.
Uh-huh.
They didn't really want to tape them. They just wanted them to let them know that here's a camera. And your image is always colonized. Do you want this to happen? Even though they never turned it on to record. It was just very interesting. I learned so much about, once again, compassion.
And you're going back to Ghana, which is why you're going to be on an airplane during the first residency.
Boo-hoo.
Tell me, what are you going to do in Ghana, and what's up?
Okay. Well, you know, I'm going to rest. But there is also, there's I met this gentleman after I was doing some work, did a fundraiser for University Beyond Bars. His name is Greg Lamond, and he is into bicycling. He's the guy who won the first Tour de France, American.
Wow.
And I think he won it 3 times. And so he is interested in this kind of factory, a little small factory that makes bamboo bikes.
You're kidding.
Yeah, yeah. And he wants to do a piece on that because it's
a film?
Yeah.
And are you going to shoot it?
Well, I'm going to do some groundwork for it when I go there. I'm going to go to the little factory where it is and talk to the gentleman who started it and talk to him about sustainability, why bamboo bikes and the strength of them and those kinds of things. Because it employs people. It helps in getting things around, you know. So.
And it's sustainable and it's light on the environment.
Yeah. So I'm going to look at that, but there's also this other group of women, young girls who are, and I'm not going to even try to pronounce what they're called, but they head carry and the market. And these women.
They head carry?
Head carry.
What does that mean?
Okay. You know, you see all the number of images of Africa with women with things on their head, carrying things on their head, you know, walking like the most beautiful gazelles that you've ever seen, just statuesque and everything. So, you know.
With a bundle on their head?
With a bundle
That's
on their
head. That's the Space Needle. That's the inspiration. I'm serious.
Remember, you were going to do something
on
the Space
Needle. Yeah, yeah. Now I'm going to work on Space Needle at 50. Yeah.
Whoa.
Because, didn't you know? Oh, the Space Needle was indirectly inspired by North African women carrying bundles on their heads.
Get out of here.
No, I, the source of this is Victor Steinbrück's personal journal called My Space Needle Story. When I was doing this other film, I Space Needle at 40, I was doing this research, and so I went back, because the Space Needle looks like a female figure. Well, it turns out Victor Steinbrück was agonizing about the design. There were more than one architect, obviously, that worked on the Space Needle, but he was flailing about, trying to figure out creatively, you know, how to make this symbol of the 21st century something that would be very unique and memorable and distinctive. And he was looking around his living room, and he saw this little a wooden sculpture called the Feminine One. It had like 3 legs at the bottom that came together, and then at the top it went out again. Mm. You know, looking at it, you wouldn't necessarily see a female figure. But the artist who made this got this idea when he was in North Africa looking at women carrying bundles on his head, and he named the sculpture the Feminine One. And it was that which inspired Victor Steinbrück to come up with the shape that became the shape of the Space Needle. So I think...
I see it.
Yeah, you can see it.
Oh,
But it's also African women carrying bundles on their head. You know?
That's it.
So for this new movie, I'm planning to honor this connection between art, North African women carrying bundles on their head.
Right.
Seattle.
Yeah.
And the kind of global orientation that we have here. And also, it's really, this new film for me is going to be about women's power.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. So we have, you know, the Seattle Storm that's just done great work. Yeah.
Yeah.
All
right.
Well, the Mariners have been in the tank, you know.
Yeah, right. And they don't get paid hardly anything.
They don't get paid hardly anything.
Oh,
but,
But they're excellent.
They're excellent. And I think there's something that happens to women. I mean, I'm in my 50s now. And, you know, if you think of the Space Needle as a woman, and if you think of turning 50, women, you know, hold a lot of important power.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's going to be one of the organizing themes of this next film that I'm working on. It's going to be a short experimental film.
Oh, that sounds fabulous.
Yeah, so if you see pictures of women
with bundles on
their head, you got to take pictures of them.
You will have more footage of women with bundles on your head than you could ever imagine.
Okay, and make sure it's a silhouette. I want to
see you want silhouette.
You know, I want to make sure that we can see the shape.
Okay, I got
really
you.
Clearly without a lot of noise in the background.
Okay,
and then I know
shoot into the sun. Yeah,
you know, sure, them, whatever.
Yeah, right.
Whatever, or on a hill or something, somewhere where we can see, or you could even shoot from below. You know,
gotcha.
Up toward the sky.
Right, exactly.
You know, something like that. But another key visual idea that came to me was. I was looking at the newspaper, and you know TSA, the security people at the airport? Well, they now have people stand with their legs apart and their hands on their heads like the Space Needle. So I'm seeing, like, visual continuity of shape.
Oh, wow!
That these people who are actually going through security and doing that body scan thing, I think they're doing the Space Needle.
I think you got something there.
I think
you got something there. You're going to get many silhouettes, more than you could ever imagine. And what's so good about that is that you're really breaking the frame. You're not freezing the frame. You're breaking the frame. You're saying that this icon of the Space Needle has so much meaning in it that crosses all kinds of borders and barriers, even to... I mean, and continents.
That's
and
right.
And continents.
Yeah.
That is, and to see that from the female, to see that from a feminine perspective, that
and
is fantastic. Yeah. Is power.
Enduring. Mm-hmm. Enduring power.
Mm-hmm.
And creative power. So I'm going to be looking for some music, because I want the music to be written by Seattle women. Anyway, let's see. What else would you like? Is there anything you want to say to these new students that you're going to meet on?
Yeah, well, I'm really excited about teaching this class. I think the subject matter is extremely important. That is, what I like about this class is that it feeds and fuels into so many different areas. It's like the Mississippi River. It has so many tributaries. But the primary tributary is you. I'm a very student-centered professor, teacher, educator, you know, daughter, niece, and all that. So I'm really centered in that way. And so I'm very student-centered. And I think that, like I said, we need to look at how we have this power to change within ourselves. And oftentimes, sometimes, it can feel a little uncomfortable. You know?
Right. Yep. That's true.
You know? I remember in Beloved, Toni Morrison's Beloved, when the main character was running away and she met this white woman named Velvet, and the main character was running and she was like, she fell and everything, and her feet were swollen and cold and frozen and numb, and Velvet grabbed her feet and she rubbed it, and the main character was like, ah, that hurts. She says, anything that's coming alive sometimes goes through a little discomfort. So sometimes, just like me in Liberia, in Ghana, when I was doing the Ghanaian women, I came in, here I come to save the day. I want to talk about this, which is good. I realized how imperial I was, choosing what I wanted to talk about instead of saying, what can I do? I have this. And I don't mean just to be a servant for someone, but using my power in a responsible way. And so this is how I see this class. This class is the ability to use your power in a really compassionate way, and first starting with that compassion with yourself, and then moving from there out and see how you continue to practice this, right? But also to understand our power. And that's the reason why I like this class, you know, because I'm going to learn so much. Woo-hoo!
Hey, yeah, well, yeah, and I will too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it'll be great.
Yeah.
So, oh, Gilda, I'm so glad you're able to do this.
Thank you.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And communicating across cultures is something that it has kind of a nice ring to it, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah,
it
yeah.
Does,
yeah,
it does.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's about power, knowledge, self-awareness. Mm-hmm. And I like what you said about the imperial.
Yeah.
Because often in cross-cultural or intercultural stuff, you know, we don't see ourselves as you know, carrying around privilege.
Yeah.
And, you know, we got to get our eyes opened.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I won't knock you over the head with it. I'll just embrace you with it.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure you're going to challenge me as well, and I enjoy that.
Okay, that's great. Okay, I'll see you around. Okay. And thanks for indulging my radio fascination.
Madasi P, as they say in Ghana.
What do they say?
Madasi P, which is thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.